And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hey, everybody. I know you've missed me and you've missed this podcast after getting two episodes in one last week. I think it's good to get back to our regularly scheduled programming. And today we have a lot to talk about. I did actually watch the Black Widow trailer.
I mean, the first 30 seconds is literally just flashbacking through her time with the Avengers, essentially. And like, then
once it got to like the actual, movie stuff, there's a couple of things that are intriguing. Like, I'm interested to see Hopper's character, or not Hopper, what's the actor's name? The one who played Hopper in Stranger Things. See what his character is all about and all that jazz. And Taskmaster looks cool. But I don't know what it is. I was never, maybe it's just because I was never hyped for a Black Widow movie, that I'm still not hyped for the Black Widow movie, even though there's still kind of a glaring plot point with Black Widow in the first place. And it's the fact that she can't technically be a KGB agent in this universe, because the KGB would have dissolved when she was like 2-3 years old. So I don't know. They'll give it I don't know. I just like it looks cool. I'm sure people that are hyped for the movie will be hyped for the trailer. There's some cool action sequences, some aerial stuff. Taskmaster just looks just evil, which is the point. So we'll see what happens. I will still go to the theater when it is safe to watch it. I will not watch it on, I'm not paying $30 to watch it on my computer.
I can't believe Disney's still doing that. Like,
well, because people keep giving them money for it.
But like, it's working a lot better for HBO Max and Warner Brothers by putting not just Zack Snyder's Justice League on there, but Godzilla versus Kong, you know, and like, and they have a whole array of big blockbuster movies that are just going to be coming right to HBO Max in theaters at the same time. That they're doing it for free. It's part of your subscription. You don't have to spend an extra $30 on the movie.
Yeah, which is, like I said, if I'm going to be paying $30, I'm going to do it for that movie theater effect. And if I, actually, it won't even be $30. If like let's say I go buy myself, it's going to be like $12.
I'll just buy myself the senior citizen ticket on a matinee.
The only time I actually bought a movie that was over the summer, I paid the $20 to watch Bill and Ted Face the Music. But that was off Amazon Prime Theater Access, which was fine. Like, it was just like renting any other movie. It was a little bit more expensive because that movie was still in theaters, which made sense, but I couldn't go to a movie theater and watch it. Here, I have the option of going to the theater, so I'm going to go to the movie theater. But with that, let's talk about the episode 3 of Falcon and Winter Soldier titled Power Broker. And we get a nice, very PC commercial of the Global Repatriation Council, which is, it's a very commercialized, like very PR kind of, like if the WHO was going to do an ad, this is what it looks like. So we actually find that the GRC is partially backing Walker, or he reports to them in some capacity, because the GRC van, we see their symbol as stupid face and sidekick arrive. So Walker and Battlestar, by the way, speaks German. Kudos to him for speaking German. And Walker is just like, he's like, don't you know who I am? And a friend pointed out that this is actually kind of akin to Ultimate Captain America, where like they were in a foreign country and he was surprised that like people weren't intimidated by him. And this guy, this German guy who helped Carly and the other Flag Smashers escape, is actually not, he's not intimidated by him. And he's like, don't you know who I am? And the guy spits in Walker's face, and Walker's kind of a baby about it. So neither the government nor the CIA can actually find anything about the Flag Smashers, where they're going, what their ultimate goal is. I'm making Michael dizzy as I spin around my room a little bit to close my door. And the CIA is clueless. For those that don't know, or Langley, the CIA, anyway, they're clueless, and they suggest like maybe they should talk to Sam because they know stuff. But meanwhile, Bucky asks to go see Zemo alone, and you know, Zemo got an upgraded cell. It actually looks pretty cozy, you know. It's a nice prison cell. Looks like he can move around now. He's not trapped in a box. So Zemo tries to use the words from Civil War and they don't work on him, thank God. But Zemo's like, well, I had to try. I'm like, you're a dick, but you're fun. So he says that something along the lines of like, at least you weren't conscious for most of the things that you did, and actually sort of apologizes. He's like, sorry, I used you, but like you were a means to an end. I'm like, well, this is more of an apology than he will ever get from Hydra, so I guess it's something. Bucky doesn't beat around the bush and says that this is the super soldiers, yada yada yada. Zemo says he's desperate, that they're desperate, but he knows where they can begin. Zemo's kind of crazy, but he's got a code. That's what Bucky tells Sam, as we get this kind of like Bucky telling Sam we need to break Zemo out of prison, and then Zemo breaks out of prison. Pretty much single-handedly. The only things Bucky did was he dropped a piece of paper that caused a riot. So, bonus points. Sam is obviously not happy with this. And Bucky basically says, like, just trust me. So Zemo escapes. It's a decent, actually, escape plan. So clearly Zemo's had some time to work on it. We also find out that Zemo's pretty loaded. Obviously anybody who's read the comics know that he's actually Baron Zemo. So he's a Baron. That's a pretty big deal. And he's got really, really pretty cars. Like, I want those cars. They were very pretty.
And he is billed as such too in the show.
Yeah. Which is good. He grabs some stuff from one of the cars and we see a purple mask. Zemo is, you know, was rich before the Sokovia disaster, and he's still pretty loaded because he has his own private jet and a very cool old looking butler dude. And they're talking about the food and as they get on the plane, and the butler guy's like, I'm really sorry, but like some of the food might be spoiled because the fridge is broken. And he's like, yeah, if it's rotten, give it to these guys. And they both kind of laugh. I'm like, this is a different side of Zemo that we've seen. Clearly prison has done him some good, at least so far. Like, he's a little bit more like, when we saw him in Civil War, he was very murderous, very like, the Sokovia disaster still very fresh in his mind, and he was very, very dark and like broody. Here, he's still all those things, but he cracks jokes now.
He has a personality.
We'll get to people that have a personality now in a little bit. So they go to, Zemo has a sense of humor. So he actually gets Bucky's notebook, and dude, not cool. Don't touch the notebook. And then they talk about Marvin Gaye and the Trouble Man soundtrack, harkening back to the conversation Sam and Steve had about the Trouble Man soundtrack. And then Zemo's like, ah, yes, this is a very comprehensive African-American experience. And Sam's like, he's not allowed to say that, but he's right. And funny enough, Marvin Gaye was actually born in 1939, the same year The Hobbit came out. So Bucky was reading The Hobbit right around the time Marvin Gaye was being born. I don't know, something like that. So they then there's this conversation about Steve and the super soldiers, and also talking about like Walker and like this concept of the superpowered soldiers, like the Red Skull and the world. And we get deeper sort of into Zemo's psyche. So they go to Madripoor. Why is Madripoor important?
X-Men.
Exactly. So Madripoor, I'm less familiar with it, but it's kind of like Pirate Bay, lawlessness. Like, these are all the bad guys go to hide out kind of a place.
Yeah, I read one of the Easter eggs was one of the clubs is co-owned by Wolverine under his codename Patches.
Yeah, because this is like the one thing I wanted the MCU to stay away from was Wolverine. So if this is as close as I get to Wolverine for a very long time, I will be very happy. Like, that's enough. So yeah, lots of connections to the X-Men universe. So meanwhile, Carly, whatever her name is in Latvia. Almost said Latveria. Not yet. We're not there yet. Latvia. In a resettlement camp. And somebody named Danya is dying. And we don't really know what connection she has. At first I thought it was her mom, but then she later on calls her by her first name. So I'm not sure what their relationship is. It's like a mentor.
According to the IMDb credits, it is Veronica Falcon plays Mama Danya.
Yeah, so Mama Danya could be kind of like a foster mom type of situation or like, yeah.
Yeah.
So Sam has to, she is dying of tuberculosis because it's a thing in camps and things. So they arrive, our heroes and Dipstick arrive in Madripoor and they get in a cool car and Sam looks a little ridiculous. Like, it's so not Sam, which is the point, but he's dressed as some dude called the Smiling Tiger or something. And for a dude called the Smiling Tiger, you think Sam would have thought to crack a smile, but you know, I wouldn't want to be surrounded by bad guys either.
Well, in his defense, the Smiling Tiger is technically supposed to be a bad guy.
I know!
So for like, him to crack a smile...
Get into the undercover thing, because Sam can't undercover. But that's okay, because something we're seeing over the course of this series is that Sam is sort of slowly becoming Captain America in like the concept, which is really, really important because this is something that he struggles with and like whether he can wield the shield. And that's kind of been one of the primary motifs of the show. So where were we? They arrive at a sketchy bar. It's Madripoor, they're all sketchy bars, but they talk about how the power broker, there's a sign as they're walking called the power broker is watching, which we've heard mentions of the power broker previously. And clearly he's the one in charge, but they want to talk to somebody named Selby. Selby also, funny enough, I got it from Murphy's Multiverse, that Selby also has an X-Men related connection. She's one of the, Selby was like a name worn by many characters, but one character was part of like the Mutant Underground. So hopefully this will somehow all tie into the eventual inclusion of mutants in the MCU somehow. So Zemo doesn't seem to know much about the power broker, but it seems like he knows enough to know to stay away. But Zemo puts Bucky on display as the Winter Soldier. And the demonstration actually works. But, you know, Sam drinking the Smiling Tiger signature drink was just, I feel so bad for Sam because that was just me. But Sam is also rightfully worried, but I think this demonstrates that what the show is trying to accomplish is that Bucky's not the Winter Soldier anymore and that he is finally in control of his actions. So the choices that he makes are his own, even if he's just playing a part. There's also some really good musical choices here. Anyway, so they meet with Selby and Selby explains that there's a guy named Wilfred Nagel and he created the serum and yada, yada, yada. And then then Sam gets a phone call from Sarah and they're like, put it on speaker. And Sam tries to play it cool. But then Sarah says something like, bye Sam. And something about Cheerios because there's kids in the background. And Selby is shot dead. And then there's a bounty. So they run. And who should they run into right when things are dire?
Before we run into our friend that has been missing, who shot Selby?
I don't remember. Was it Bucky?
Mm-mm. It was nobody. Zemo? It was nobody in the room.
Oh, that's right. So that means whoever shot them wanted whoever shot Selby wanted the trio dead and wanted Selby dead.
Yeah, because that bounty came out. That bounty came out pretty quick and it wasn't from anyone in that room.
I wonder if our friend had something to do with it. Anyway, but just one thing. So yeah, Dr. Wilfred Nagel works for the power broker. So then they need to get out of Madripoor, and then, but you know, there's now a bounty. So everybody's trying to get them, and rescue comes in the very unlikely spot of Sharon Carter, who we haven't seen since she stole Cap's shield and Falcon's wings for Steve in Civil War. And then she had gone on the run. Because when in the previous, they hinted at this, because in the previous episode, when they talked about, you know, stealing Cap's shield, Sam was like, we're not going to be fugitives anymore. I don't want to do that. Sharon's still a fugitive. I'm like, oh, damn. So Sharon, who doesn't seem to have been blipped, is kind of in, or so far as we know, kind of has a cushy gig. She has a nice house with like protection. She's an art thief dealer person, or whatever it is she's doing. She has clients and she does business, and Madripoor doesn't extradite. This Sharon is a little bit bitter, a little bit colder, and sassier. And speaking of people with a personality, Sharon has one. She has one. She's not just like generic Agent 13 or CIA operative. Like, you, throughout the two appearances that she's had previously in Winter Soldier and Civil War, she always like, I really didn't get the obsession. I like the actress that plays her. She's a really good actress. I really enjoy seeing her. But I just couldn't understand the like, oh my God, Sharon Carter is so awesome part, because she didn't do anything that exciting. And I didn't feel like she contributed anything to the story that couldn't have been filled by a different character. And my logic is, if you take a character, and this is something I talked about when I covered Days of Future Past, is if you can take this character and replace him with a completely different character and the narrative doesn't change, then what is the point? So I felt like Sharon wasn't a necessary character. Like, if you think about it, everything Sharon did, except for like the undercover stuff, could have been easily done by Maria Hill or anybody else. Like generic SHIELD agent number 127, right? Except for the kissing Steve part. So like this time you can see why Sharon is necessary, because Sharon is connected. She's part of the plot. And this is like, cool. It's cool to see something be done with her. So she helps them in exchange for going home, because she's like, I don't take charity. But there's kind of funny thing, because they talk about the new Captain America and Bucky's like, don't get me started. And Sharon is like, but you love all of that Star Spangled bullshit. I'm like, well, he does what it's Steve. This is a different ball game. This is fake Steve. This is government propaganda Steve. This is not a, well, this isn't Steve. This is John Russell. So, or Walker, John Walker. So that's the point. So they go to a container 4261, and it's mostly empty, but then they find a false wall and stretch through, and they find our nerdy generic scientist dude who is not dumb. Like, he knows he's probably gonna die, but like he's gonna cooperate. And we see that Sharon is pretty badass. Like, we've never really seen her fight that much, and here we really get to see it. Like, she's got a stab and she's like fighting people. Like, really kudos on the fighting choreography here. So the scientist got recruited by Hydra after that little Siberia experiment from Civil War failed, but then Hydra went kaboom and the CIA recruited him. But the CIA provided him with what is implied to be Isaiah's blood samples. And he was able to recreate the super soldier serum and optimize it so that it can be just injected or ingested or however it is, as opposed to like the fancy schmancy machines and all of the serum and what they did to Steve. And presumably what they also did to Isaiah. But then the blip happened and he got dusted. And by the time, you know, 5 years later, government priorities have changed. Things are different now. So everything is different now. So that means that he wasn't really needed. So he went to work for the power broker. But then Carly stole the vials, 20 vials from the power broker. And he's probably not happy about that. Meanwhile, Carly, they're staking out like a different some kind of like redistribution facility of the Repatriation Council. Yeah, Sharon Sirius, like, it's really funny because, like, as they're talking, Sharon is, like, kicking Major butt, and I'm like, maybe you should help Sharon out a little bit. Like, girl needs some help here. Finally, Zemo shoots Nagel as the lab gets blown up literally 2 seconds later, and Zemo seemingly gets away. But then he ends up on top of the container, and he's got a mask on. And we see that nice shot of him wearing his Baron Zemo mask as the villain that he is. It was a really nice shot. I wish the mask was like a little bit brighter purple, but I really liked what we saw with it. So Zemo helps them, and as Bucky and Steve argue because they went in the wrong direction, and he gets a cool car. But Sharon doesn't come with them. In fact, she actually goes, she's like, just get me that pardon. And then she gets into a car with somebody else and says, we have a problem. Now, I wonder what that means. Now,
I wonder who that person is.
Huh?
And I wonder who that person is.
Yeah, we've never seen that other person. We don't know who that is. We also don't know what the problem is. Is the problem now that, you know, the power broker's lead scientist is dead? Like, what is actually the problem? And I wonder if and somebody pointed this out, like, I wonder if Sharon has a connection to the power broker. I really don't want her to be the villain. I think it's just too easy to make her a villain. But it would be interesting. I wonder if part of the deal of living in Madripoor is that she had to do some business with the power broker because he's the one that makes the rules and is the ultimate guy you don't want to cross. And I can't imagine he'd be super happy that former CIA SHIELD operative lady just shows up. Like, there's got to be some quid pro quo. So Morgenthau and the guy we find out that Carly and the other guy were test subjects for Nagel's experiments. And that is how they were enhanced by the super soldier serum. And they had dreams and blips and things like that. Meanwhile, Walker and Hoskins are very desperate for intel and information, and they're going to do some stuff off the book now. Bucky, as they're flying back, Bucky basically says something like, I'm not going to let him have the shield and I'm going to take it. Like, I'm just going to take it. And this actually really harkens to the comics to me because it reminded me when Bucky, after Steve dies, there's a very, very short stint where Tony decides that Clint Barton should be Captain America and Kate Bishop and Eli Bradley shoot that down pretty quickly. It's actually very hilarious, but there's another scene later on where Natasha is transporting the shield and Bucky just steals it and he takes it. And whether or not Bucky, I ultimately believe Bucky's not ready to be Captain America yet. I think this show is making a really good case for Sam to be Captain America. At the same time, I think Walker needs to lose the shield and I don't care how it happens. I don't think Bucky should take up the mantle yet. But we can't let Walker keep the shield. That's just the rule. That's the rule. So the Flag Smashers take some supplies and then they seemingly don't kill anybody. But right after they get in the car, the building explodes and the guy in the car was like, what are you doing? And she's like, we're done being nice. Another interesting thing is they reroute to Lithuania to follow some intel on Mama Danya because Sam calls, what's his name? Joaquin Torres.
Torres.
Yep. Yeah, he calls Torres and gets the intel, so they reroute the plane. As they arrive, Bucky's like, I'm going to go on my own. But there's an interesting bit of dialogue here where Zemo talks about what happened in the aftermath of Sokovia. Which is that before the rubble was even cleared, neighboring countries sort of chopped it up between themselves. And some people have suggested that one of those countries could be Latveria. And let's be real here, Dr. Doom would totally take advantage. No doubt he would do that. But we'll see what happens with that and where we go from there. And Zemo mentions that there is now a memorial for what happened in Sokovia. And he says, I bet you guys haven't been to the memorial. And like, to be honest, they've been a little bit busy. One, neither one of them was there. Two, one was on the run. One was helping Captain America search for the other one. Then there was a civil war. Then they were on the run. One was in Wakanda. Like, they didn't really have time to go touristing. But anyway, so Bucky goes for a walk and we find something familiar. These little beads with a strange symbol on it. And then, so he follows the breadcrumbs and it leads him to Ayo, one of the Dora Milaje from Wakanda, who says that she is here for Zemo. Really cool cameo, really awesome that they actually got Ayo, because I don't think we've seen her since I think we saw a brief cameo of her
in Endgame.
Black Panther, but we also saw her, but I don't think she had any lines. We did see her really well in Civil War, though, as the primary bodyguard for T'Challa when he's in Europe. So it's what I really love about these episodes is that you want it to keep going. You don't really see the clear ending, and they've done a really good job of having really interesting endings that make you want more. And I love it does make me wish we had more episodes to look forward to, because at this point we are halfway through the series. So after this point, they essentially have three episodes to wrap up all these threads with John Walker, with the Power Broker, the Flag Smashers, and figure out the legacy of Captain America. And I think they can do it.
And it should be noted that Ayo was brought in as well. Like, there was an Easter egg at the beginning of the episode that was thrown out there about how Bucky, or about how Zemo, like, because Sam and Bucky, they're talking about, like, do we really want to break him out, blah, blah, blah.
They killed King T'Chaka, yeah.
Yeah, and like when you mention King T'Chaka, you're kind of like, you see the cameo at the end, you go, oh, that's the reason why they mentioned it, because they ended up putting the little tease in there, not knowing that, like, oh, that was actually going to lead to something. So, and that was the thing that you and I texted about, that, like, oh, so that's why they mentioned it. So that was actually smart. And obviously she's going to play a bigger role in the episodes to come, because it's like, obviously she wants Zemo's head for what he did to T'Chaka, but they, at the same time, they need him to track this down and then eventually lead to wherever they're going to go to at the end of the series. So it's going to play an interesting dynamic, adding her to the mix.
Yeah. And also, I really, really got to give them credit for the fact that they didn't go for the obvious choice of countries that, you know, they could have gone to. Because Riga and Latvia and, like, Lithuania, like, people, first of all, don't really know those places exist. They probably can't find them on a map. I can, because I can. But I really like the fact that they, you know, it looks like they shot at least the aerial shots were in Riga. I know they also shot in the Czech Republic during the pandemic when they were doing, you know, finishing up the shooting. So it's really exciting. We do know that we will probably go to the memorial, because now they've dropped the hint at that. We also saw the memorial briefly in the trailers. We do know we'll also get to see Bucky and Sam maybe towards the end of the series, back in Louisiana on Sarah's boat. I'm curious to see where things go with Sharon. Like I said, I hope she's not the villain. I feel like that would be just too convenient. I wonder if Baron Zemo's actually the Power Broker, but, like, doesn't tell anybody he's the Power Broker, and it's one of those things like, oh no, I'm not the Dread Pirate Roberts. We shall see. But it's a really good episode. One of the things that I pointed out that I think is really important is, first of all, Bucky is like a hurt kitten, and like he needs a hug, but I think he needs a hug in every episode.
I hate his haircut. I really hate his haircut.
I really don't. I hated his Civil War haircut more. But the haircut is important, because if you look at every time we've seen the Winter Soldier or Winter Soldier adjacent, Right, it was the long hair. The short hair is a symbolic change of back to Bucky.
Yeah.
And what is noted and important to note is that the Bucky here is a kind of a combination of two different characters. He's Bucky Barnes, like Captain America's sidekick, but he's also Arnie Roth, Captain America's childhood best friend. Because in the comics, and I pointed this out, I think, when we were reviewing the first Avenger, that Bucky doesn't meet Steve until after Steve is Captain America. And Bucky was also like a teenager. So there's that. But so this combination of these two characters is really important. I would like to see a little bit more Arnie Roth as we go on. I think we're seeing little hints of this, but we will see if those pan out the way I think it does. I don't want to say anything yet. Zemo's funny. Like, some of the best jokes were Zemo's jokes in this episode. That was pretty fun. What else was I gonna say?
I'm not gonna lie, Zemo looks like a power broker, like with that coat.
At the same time though, it doesn't work to his but at the same time it doesn't make sense for him to be the bad guy. Or the power broker, I mean, because Zemo's whole shtick is the world can't have superheroes. So if I were in his shoes, the only way I could see him being the power broker was if he wanted to create his own army to stop the other army. But
that other army doesn't really exist anymore.
Huh?
That other army really doesn't exist anymore.
Right. But remember, he also had the chance to do something with the original super soldiers, and he just killed them.
Yep.
Which makes me think that it's not him. But our pool of options is non-existent at this point. We don't have any options. We don't really know anything about the power broker yet. But I kind of hope the power broker, not going to lie, turns out to be one of those senators that, you know, like, put up Walker as their Captain America. It would just be so satisfying to see it. And it would make sense, because come on, government, you know, officials don't have shady deals going on, please. When's the last time we had a scandal about a senator? Last week?
A couple days ago.
There you go.
Literally, but that one involves minors.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about. Yeah. So, like, point being that, like, it's always something. So why can't it be a power broker type of thing? But I wonder though, because what's his name? Nagel said that he worked with the CIA before the blip, right?
Yeah.
So it's entirely possible that whoever is the power broker now used to work for the CIA and is probably the person responsible for making our new Captain America in some capacity. Because I'm sorry, we talked about this in the second episode. Like, there is no way this guy is not enhanced even slightly. Like, come on. There has to be at least something in there.
Oh, and super quick, that woman that we saw with Sharon, that person is billed as Sharon's bodyguard.
Okay, interesting. So this doesn't really rule out the idea of Sharon not being the power broker, but at the same time, I feel like it's too easy to make her the villain. Like, she could be working in part with the power broker to some extent, but she's pretty bitter about the superheroes. So show about bitter people in a bitter situation.
But it's Sharon's bodyguard.
I mean, Sharon has a really nice house, remember? So yeah. Like, she's rolling in the dough. Even if, like, she mentioned that, like, she can't even call her father, who is the son of Peggy's brother. Just to continue with, you know, that thread as well. So I'm hoping we'll see more of Sharon. I think she's an interesting character, finally. She's definitely finally getting the spotlight, and somebody's finally doing something with her. Which they really should have done beforehand, but details, and she wasn't really an important character up until this point anyway. So we'll see what happens.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep.
So I hope you all enjoyed this episode, because I did. And now Michael's going to tell you about all those social medias.
The real quick, the bar that I referenced at the beginning, for Wolverine, it is the Princess Bar.
Yep.
That they showed.
Yep.
Which first appeared in Marvel Comics Presents Volume 1, Issue 1.
Yep.
Oh, and there was a line that you did that you probably picked up on it, but you didn't bring it up. But when Sam says to Bucky, "You're not going to move your seat up, are you?" And Bucky replies, "No," yeah, is a callback to obviously Captain America: Civil War, yep, when the positions were reversed and Sam didn't move his seat up for Bucky.
And he's like, "You're not going to move your seat, are you?" And it's like, "Nope." Yep. I did not actually mention it in my review because I forgot about it, but it is really funny just to, like I said, one of the things I'm really, really enjoying is this, like, silly yet really worthwhile relationship between Sam and Bucky and where it's going. And it's not a romantic relationship, people, so, like, take a chill pill, but it is an important relationship because they're bound by the fact that they both really cared about the same guy, Steve Rogers. And while it's not as much about Steve himself, it's about the legacy Steve leaves behind. I think the relationship that they have and the way that things are unfolding between them is really, really important because they're not really friends. Or they weren't up until this point. And now we're starting to see, like, more banter, more of them actually having real conversations.
But at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, please keep those fanfics coming because that's what people do.
Okay, but, like, can we keep the Sam and Bucky fix to a minimum, please? Like, really? It's like, oh, we couldn't get Sam and Steve together. Oh, we couldn't get Steve and Tony together. Look, two men together who have professional chemistry. They must be in love. Like, I'm all for shipping. Anybody that reads my blogs know I'm a shipper, but, like, not everything needs to be a ship, okay? Like, some things are just not a thing. And sometimes it's like one of those things, like, I feel like sometimes fandom has this attitude that, like, if you don't ship something, you're bad. It definitely happens in the Supergirl fandom, right? It's actually why I stopped watching Supergirl, because they made it impossible to enjoy the show. But, like, relax. Like, nobody, like, I'm sorry, if you actually think Sam and Bucky are gonna be canon, like, just, it ain't gonna happen. Like, it's just not, I'm sorry. But, you know, ship what you want, just don't come at people if they don't ship what you ship.
Yep. Some of that.
Oh, sorry. This is really important. I'm sorry. I have to say this. Actors are not their characters. Stop sending Wyatt Russell hate. Like, he's supposed to be playing a douchebag. That's the point. We're not supposed to like Wyatt. We're not supposed to like John Walker, right? But we can like Wyatt Russell and the role, the acting choices that he's making. Right. And part of the choices that he's making is showing that John Walker is slowly unraveling, whether it's because of the super soldier serum or for whatever reason, but he's getting to that Cocoa for Cocoa Puffs moment.
Who knows? Maybe it'll be the next episode because we're at literally the halfway point.
And there were some rumors suggesting that, like, the next episode might be a more Battlestar Captain America focused episode. So we'll get a little bit more into, you know, Walker and Hoskins. I'd really like some background on Hoskins because I know literally nothing about him other than his name, that he was in the army and that he's
John's sidekick. Yeah, and they're just friends. Yeah. So with that, social medias, I sidetrack things. I'm so sorry. No,
it's fine.
But you can follow me on Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitch doing the gaming thing. Oh man, I didn't put that on the other podcast. I don't know, I'm such an idiot. Anyways, you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/themichaelx75 doing the gaming thing. And then of course, everything's on txhthockey.com and for the show specific /nerdy-notions.
And for me, you can always find me on geekgirl101.tumblr.com. That is the best way to reach me. You can find me at Geeky Kaplan, that's Kaplan with a K, on Twitter, after the greatest superhero ever, Billy Kaplan. And of course, geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com, domain name coming eventually.
Please read my new article called The Afikoman Effect about the state of Jewish representation in media. It's going to be hopefully part of a series about Jewish representation in media and the different types of representation that exist. It's not a big list, but it is an interesting one. So check that out. And of course, on the website, txhthockey.com, and for this show / Nerdy Notions. Ha ha.
Nerdy Notions,
excuse me. So with that, thank you so much for listening. Grab your shields, and we'll catch you on the flip side next week as we tackle episode 4 of Captain America, or Falcon and the Winter Soldier.